I'm Christopher Granger, cardiologist at Duke University, and I'm delighted to be here with Jennifer Green, who's professor of medicine and is an endocrinologist diabetes care specialist at Duke. And I've had the pleasure of working with Jennifer on this really important topic of the intersection of diabetes and cardiovascular disease, including trying to implement more effectively the treatments which we now have, specifically the SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 receptor agonists, to reduce cardiovascular risk for patients at risk of or with cardiovascular disease. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we have, Jennifer, this document that the American College of Cardiology has just published. It's the 2020 Expert Consensus Decision Pathway on Novel Therapies for CV Risk Reduction for Patients with Type 2 Diabetes. And it comprehensively addresses this critically important issue. It was put together by a committee that's expert in how you consider care pathways. And it was also done in a way that was endorsed by the American Diabetes Association. And I think, in fact, you were part of the review process.
That's right. I and several other individuals from the ADA had the opportunity to weigh in on the document and some of the recommendations that it contains before it was finalized. So it was definitely a collaborative effort.
Great. And this is really now, this is the state of the art for the field, this document. So we're pleased to review some of the key features and then refer you to it for more details. The document was kind of organized around three key areas for management of these patients. One is to screen for type 2 diabetes in patients with or at high risk for cardiovascular disease. And Jennifer, this is partly because we know that about a third of our patients with cardiovascular disease, in fact, have underlying diabetes, and at least half the time that's not yet been diagnosed. So anybody who a cardiologist sees who's not yet been recently screened should be screened for diabetes. Secondly, is for those who have diabetes, in fact, for everybody, but especially those who have diabetes, aggressively treat the cardiovascular risk factors, things like optimal treatment of lipids and blood pressure and that kind of thing. And thirdly, incorporate these newer glucose-lowering agents with evidence for reducing cardiovascular outcomes in our routine practice. And that's the key here. It's not to refer it back to a diabetes care specialist or an endocrinologist. These now are cardiovascular drugs, and they should be used by cardiologists for this patient population. So, Jennifer, can you take us through what you think are the main considerations when a cardiologist sees one of these patients who has type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease on how to choose which of these treatments to use and how to use them?
Sure. One of the things that I really like about this document is, I think, first of all, it makes clear that for high-risk patients with diabetes, that really either pathway, either the SGLT2 inhibitor or the GLP-1 receptor agonist pathway, are very reasonable, and either approach provides benefits, although the benefits that are provided may differ by drug class. But there are some very useful algorithms or pathways, if you like, spelled out in the document that help the prescriber decide perhaps which class might be preferable. And sometimes it just boils down to what the patient is most comfortable using and maybe what the patient and the prescriber's sort of primary goals of therapy are.
So Jennifer, let's just take a hypothetical patient. Let's say a typical patient who I saw last week, a 68-year-old woman who's modestly overweight, came in with acute coronary syndrome, got a coronary stent placed. It's been hemodynamically stable, let's say has mild CKD, creatinine clearance of 50, and I'm discharging this patient. How should I approach in her the diabetes care issues?
Right. So if this is a person who has just been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and they're not on any medications of any diabetes class, this guidance document would recommend that as the first step, you treat her with either an SGLT2 inhibitor or a GLP-1 receptor agonist. And I would endorse such an approach based on the really very robust set of outcomes data that we have from the numerous cardiovascular outcomes trials that have been completed. The ADA guidelines for this year, for 2020, still differ a bit in that they continue to recommend metformin as sort of baseline fundamental treatment for patients with type 2 diabetes. But I do think in particular circumstances where a person is diagnosed with diabetes in the setting of known cardiovascular complications and known high cardiovascular risk, it's very, very reasonable to choose one of these newer classes of drugs to preferentially reduce cardiovascular risk through that mechanism, also provide some glycemic control, and then later consider down the line whether or not they might need additional agents to address hyperglycemia. So I think first-line use is very well substantiated. And good job diagnosing this person's diabetes.
I think most people are doing this. And we do routinely check a hemoglobin A1C on all patients who we see with a cardiovascular event. And let's say this patient was, 7.7 or something, where you didn't have to consider insulin, but you do want to make efforts to control the blood sugar in some way, but of course now in ways that improve cardiovascular outcome. So Jennifer, perhaps the easiest for us as cardiologists, just because it's a pill with relatively few side effects, would be, let's start with an SGLT2 antagonist. So we have the three that are listed in this document that have cardiovascular benefit: canagliflozin, dapagliflozin, empagliflozin. Would you feel comfortable starting one of these inhibitors at the time of discharge if this patient was stable and their creatinine was stable?
Absolutely. I think if someone is eating and drinking normally and they're ready to go home, that's really a prime opportunity to introduce one of these drugs with a demonstrated outcomes benefit. And often, this kind of intervention is deferred to outpatient care, where either it doesn't happen because the outpatient physician never really gets the message, or there's just sort of a loss of, impetus to make meaningful changes. So absolutely, I would really strongly recommend that we all think about ways to initiate these treatments before people leave the hospital.
What would you consider to be the single most important message, or maybe one or two messages, in terms of education of this patient on starting? Let's say you decided to start dapagliflozin 10 milligrams a day.
It depends if they're a man or a woman. We know that these drugs do increase the risk of genitourinary infections. And oftentimes I find that, I don't know if a stitch in time saves nine is appropriate here, but just if you kind of set the stage for the patient that this kind of thing can occur, that there are sort of personal hygiene steps that you can take to minimize the risk of this happening, and that it's to be expected and is treatable should it occur. I really think that if a side effect occurs that's pretty minor and treatable along the way, the patient's more likely to stay on the medication and understand the importance of therapy.
These things are well worked out. They're nice tables in this document that go through this in detail. Jennifer, the other thing, of course, is the cost, right? And that's a major barrier for us. Most insurance programs now cover at least one of these drugs fairly well. But this is a barrier, isn't it?
It is. I think we're fortunate, though, in that we now know that a number of drugs in both the SGLT2 inhibitor and GLP-1 receptor agonist classes can provide a cardiovascular outcomes benefit. So there's not one single appropriate choice in these drug classes. So often it takes a little bit of work. You may need to have a point person who is a pharmacist or another individual in your clinic or hospital team to help you figure out which one is most readily accessible to your patient. But usually we can find a drug for everyone.
Yeah. And then, of course, the SGLT2 inhibitors are particularly effective at preventing heart failure is a major effect. And then, of course, the data for empagliflozin, especially really impressive for reducing mortality. So let's switch gears to the GLP-1 receptor agonist. So here we have injectable drugs. Tell us about who might be an ideal candidate for a GLP-1 receptor agonist.
Well, again, this is another option for the patient with established atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease or a patient who is otherwise at high risk for MACE type events. And, these are drugs where there's a little bit of a prescribing hurdle. because it requires the patient to use an injection, although often these drugs are available as once weekly injections, which is pretty easy, and the devices are pretty user friendly. So there's a little bit of a learning curve for both the prescriber and the patient, but these are drugs that most people can take. And for some individuals, in addition to the cardiovascular outcomes benefit and glycemic lowering benefits that these drugs provide, some people find that they lose weight on them, although I would never make any promises. So someone who's really struggling with their weight might be very happy to try a drug like this preferentially if they might have that added benefit.
Well, that's great. And Jennifer, we'll also just remind people that even before considering these drugs, you know, as we mentioned, really make sure you're treating the other risk factors, including controlling blood pressure with an ACE or angiotensin receptor blocker, especially for patients who have proteinuria or any degree of renal impairment, promote physical activity, have people stop smoking cigarettes, those things.
And it's important to remember that these cardiovascular outcomes trials were conducted in a background of otherwise appropriate risk reduction. So these drugs don't work in isolation.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for helping us through this and also for your involvement in creating the document. It's a terrific document, and we encourage people to refer to it and to make sure you get your patients with type 2 diabetes and risk or with cardiovascular disease treated with these drugs. Thanks very much.
Thank you.